We're doing in Yaakov. We're up to page Yud Dalet Amud Beis in the standard editions in the Tractate Shabbos. It's Lamed Aleph Amud Aleph. Darash Rav Ula. So Rav Ula gave the following explanation. Mai Dichtiv. What does the verse in Ecclesiastes mean when it says Al Tirsha Harbe? Don't be very wicked. Harbe Udelo Lirsha Hameat Lirsha. I shouldn't be very wicked. Just a little wicked. What does the verse mean? Ela. If someone ate some garlic and everyone around him pulls their seat a little bit back from where he's sitting because his smell is drifting through the room. So now, should he eat more garlic? So he's telling us a beautiful message. As a person works on his growth, very often a person slips. And suddenly a person finds himself asking himself, am I done for? And that's when a person has to remember, no, if I messed up, I shouldn't mess up more. Story time. You guys want the long version, right? You guys want the long version. I'll tell you the long version of the story. Our story begins with King David. King David opens psalms, certain psalms he begins with Mizmor le David, and certain psalms he begins with le David Mizmor. Certain psalms begin with a song to David, and other psalms begin with to David a song. So the Talmud says, why does he sometimes say a song to David, and sometimes from David a song? What's the difference? The Talmud says that there were two ways in which King David elevated himself to the point of prophecy to say the song. Sometimes he wasn't in the mood, and so he'd have to sing. And from the song, he was inspired, and then he would say his prophetic vision. So that's when he would begin it as a song to David, because it began with a song without being inspired. The song would arouse his spirit, and then he would reach the height he needed, and then he would continue with compiling the Song of Psalms. And sometimes he was inspired. He began as being King David, the inspired one. And from there, the song emanated. And that's where King David begins the psalm with, to David a song. Because he was David, and from there went the song. So that's very interesting, because that means a song to David, the song led him to the point of the realization of David. Now, King David had ups and had downs. That's an understatement. He had total crash. David HaMelech, he took a woman who was questionably wed to someone else. And then it turned out not, but not such a nice thing to do. She was only 7 years old. Makes it even worse. And then he had her husband killed. And God tells him as a punishment, the sword will never leave his home. And as a punishment, what ends up happening is within his own home, one of his sons rapes one of his daughters. Obviously the guy was evil. He would have done it anyways, but it didn't have to happen the way it did, and that was part of David's punishment. So his own daughter suffers to some degree because of what he's done, and his baby dies because of what he's done. 7-day-old baby dies. And then he has a rebellion where his son Avshalom tries to take the throne and arouses most of Israel against him. And then his 6 or 7 concubines are raped by his son Avshalom. And all of this is part of the punishment for what he's done. And when David is walking and leaving Jerusalem, he says to himself, God must hate me now. He breaks out in leprosy and no one will come near him. And he can't have prophecy. And then he says, maybe I should just become a pagan. And he starts heading up to the place where he'd always worship God to set up an idol up there. And then his Rebbe, Ira HaYairi, comes charging out and says, David, what you doing? And his Rebbe pulls him back and he explains to him how he should view things. So now, if we were to describe David, well, David has a lot of sides to him. He has a very pious side to him, and that was the prevailing side throughout most of his life, but he also has certain serious mess-ups. So imagine a person sitting in jail for rape and murder, and you walk in and you ask him, can you tell me who you are? So if he tell you, I'm the guy who donates to charity, and I'm the guy who speaks to God every day, and I'm the guy who who's done a lot of wonderful things in my life, you'd think you're a hypocrite. You're the guy who did all these terrible things that landed you in jail. David HaMelech made mistakes. He did tshuva, but he made mistakes. How does David view himself? Does David say, I am the guy who did all these terrible things? Or does David say, I am the guy who did all the wonderful things? Or does David have the balance to be able to say, V'chatati negdi tamid, I always view what I've done wrong. I don't ignore it. I have a responsibility to make amends. I don't put it behind me and say, forget about it. Tamid, David says, just as God is always before me, my sin is always before me. I'm working to rectify. So he's working. And he says, but my identity is that of a pious person. I was sitting with a guy who he lost his father, he lost his mother, he grew up as an orphan, and he's done a lot of good in his life. He's overweight. And we were talking about whether he should start dating or not. This guy doesn't learn here, never learned here. Someone else. And he says to me, I don't see how I can start dating till I deal with the weight issue. So I said, why not? And he said, because look at me, I have this terrible weakness, I'm overweight. And I said to him, I look at you and I see greatness, I don't see weakness. I see 99% of your accomplishments are amazing. There's one area in your life where you'd like to be a little bit more amazing. So I see a person who's amazing and he's accomplished more than most people. So okay, so you'd like to weigh less and you weigh more, so what? He didn't buy it. He didn't buy it. He didn't agree to start going out. I got a phone call. The guy he had graduated from Machon Meir and serving in the army. And one Shabbos, he's sitting in the tent and he hears his cell phone go off that he just got an SMS. So, before thinking twice, he walks over to the cell phone, looks at the phone, sees the SMS, and writes back an answer on Shabbos. And then gets an answer back, and writes back. And after about 5 minutes of doing this, he stops and thinks about what he's doing. He puts down the phone, and he's shaking, saying, oh boy, it's been years now that I've been keeping Shabbos, everything down the tubes. And as he's thinking that, a guy runs by and he says, hey, it's mincha time, we're starting mincha in 2 minutes. And he looks at the guy and he looks at the phone and he looks at himself and he says, yeah, right, I'm going to go daven mincha. After what I've done, forget mincha. And with that, he goes to lie down on his bed and start pondering. And then he told me something that really excited me. It's one of the reasons we're going to do Maimonides Igeret Teiman this year. He tells me he remembered something we learned in Igeret Teiman. In Igeret Teiman, in the Yemenite epistle, the Rambam writes, he says, don't think for a minute that Yeravam ben Evat, who caused most of the Jewish people to sin, he led the Jewish people to paganism, 10 out of 12 tribes. That's a very terrible thing to do. He caused their ultimate annihilation. He's considered the sinner of all sinners. You know. So the Rambam says you should know that Yeravam ben Evat is not only going to pay the price in the world to come for that tremendous sin that he did, but for every day that he didn't don tefillin, he will also be taken to task. And if Sukkos came and he didn't have four species to shake, he'll be taken to task for that too. A person can't say, well, I've done so much wrong, so then the little ones don't count. No, everything counts. Just because you messed up on one thing doesn't permit you to mess up on the other. He remembered that. He got out of his bed, went to daven mincha, came back from mincha, and said to himself, okay, so I made a mistake, but I'm going to make better. And when he told me that story, I connected it with the other story that was going on. I said, you know, what's the difference between these two? One guy takes a little weakness that he has, and he says, that's my identity card. That's me. And the other guy, he had a big mess up. But he's saying, I'm not going to let that mess up be my ID card. That's not me. That's the greatness of David HaMelech. David HaMelech also knows he's had terrible sins and he has to make amends. But he doesn't let that define himself. If I'd ask everyone in the classroom, Tell me what your weaknesses are. Tell me what you don't like about yourself. I'm willing to bet everyone here could fill out a paper in 5 minutes. Everyone here could write what's wrong with themselves. Yet if I'd ask you what's right about yourself, what are you proud about? What are you happy with? What do you feel like you've done right in your life? You'd suddenly sit there scratching your head. You'd force yourself to write one thing and then another. Maybe you'd get three things on the page and then, wait a second, let's be real here. 80% at least of what you do is great. 80%, every day you've lived, 80% of it is great. There's 20% you'd want to improve on. Is that fair to let the 20% define us? But that's what we do. It's like this guy. He's not willing to date because he has one issue. So the guy had to grow up without parents at all, going from family to family to family, and he's a remarkable success story. But he has one issue he hasn't conquered. So that's, to him, that's his ID card. No, you can't do that. Back to our Gemara. When Shlomo HaMelech said, Al Tirsha Harbe, says the Gemara, he was saying, you made one mistake. It's very tempting, just like the guy in the tent. He catches himself SMSing on Shabbos. He says, that's it, I'm a goner. Everything I've done is fake. I'm a hypocrite. Nothing to talk about. That's wrong. Al Tirsha Harbe, that's where Shlomo HaMelech said, don't do a lot of evil. Meaning when we do one thing wrong, we're very tempted to do the next thing wrong. Where do we all encounter this? When we wake up late. You wake up late and you tell yourself, you look at the clock, it's so late, you put your head down again. Wait, hold it. Or if you get out of bed, so then everything's on backlog, right? That's it, the whole day's shot, or at least the whole morning. You don't brush your teeth, you don't comb your hair, you barely take a shower. You take a shower, you kick yourself because you're late for the chavrus, so you walk into shir late. We all know what it's like, right? That's wrong. There's one problem, don't let that create four more problems. And we'll end with a quick story. There was a yeshiva that... the students were all getting up late, and everything they did, they couldn't get the guys to get up. They couldn't get them there on time. They tried this, that, the other thing. Nothing worked. So I gave them a suggestion. I said, why don't you tell the guys that you're not working on getting up early? The deal is you're taking a month or 2 months where they can get up whenever they want, on one condition, that when they get up, they don't get upset that they're getting up late. The yeshiva will have a regular order for all the guys who get up on time. You'll have a morning seder, you'll have breakfast, but if guys get up late, you'll leave food out for them. They should take a shower, they should daven, they should run their day normally. There's one condition. No one can feel bad about getting up late. Everyone has to be comfortable about it and not beat themselves up about it. We're taking 1 month where we're not dealing with this issue. We're going to run our days happily. So what do you think happened? After 3 or 4 days, people were suddenly calm, walking into the base medrash at 10:30, and they're calm about it. And suddenly from 10:30 onward, they're having a productive morning. Now, success breeds success. When a person has a positive morning and a positive afternoon, come that night, he suddenly tells himself, in a positive way, he tells himself, hey, I could have a better morning tomorrow if I go to sleep early. No one has to tell him that because he's experienced it. So one time he slips and another time he slips, but then a few times he gets it right. And slowly he starts developing his own cycle of being positive. What happens is we go hard on ourselves, we start beating ourselves up, and that weakens ourselves. That makes us weaker, and that doesn't even give us the strength to fix. It just saps our strength. A person has to be able to look at the 80% and say, I'm great. Yeah. Be able to say, I'm great, I'm doing good. There's a lot of positive I'm doing. There's 20% that I'd like to improve. Okay, I'll have the strength to improve it when I can have that positive self-image. When I can look at myself and feel good about myself, that will give me the strength to deal with the 20%. But if all I can think about is the 20%, then I don't have strength to deal with that 20% either. And then it starts eating away at the 80%. Yes?
Around us, feel like we're only focusing on the negative and trying to improve and all the bad things, while we're not really focusing on the positive. Is that true?
Two things. A, I think it doesn't contradict what I've said. And B, there's a rabbi who taught, I think he still teaches an MTJ, Rabbi Elimelech Bluth. He's the head of the Beis Din in Williamsburg. And in the beginning of the month of Elul, he gave us a speech that I always like quoting. He said, there are two ways to enter Elul. You can enter Elul and look back and say, I have to change this and I have to change that and this was wrong and that was wrong. And then Elul becomes a very morbid time. He said, I recommend Elul be a time about where you think about how, what am I going to do right next year? Don't think what you did wrong, think what you're going to do right. Think positive. How am I going to do X right? Can I think about how to do Y better? If you can look forward with a positive outlook, then Elul is not such a hard time. And in general, I think that that's the approach a person has to take in Machon Meir. You have to look forward and think realistically. What are attainable goals for the next 3 months? You don't have to think about a year. You have to think about 3 months. And then after 3 months, you look at it and you say, okay, was that good? Was that not good? Was that hard? Am I comfortable with it? And don't try to shoot for the stars. You know, I came to yeshiva. I'd get up every morning at 3:30, 4 o'clock in the morning because I wanted to learn the whole Shas as fast as possible. And it backfired. It's not a good way to work. You have to work in an organized, balanced way and keep growing, but, you know, at a moderate pace and in a positive sense with happiness. Yeah. Don't.